Hello, everybody. Ron Evans here. The sound quality in this second episode is not as clear as it usually is when we record using Skype. This time we tried using a conference call software. So bear with us. We're still experimenting. And without further ado, here's the episode.
Welcome to Culture Voice, an international perspective on the marketing of arts and culture, in partnership with the National Arts Marketing Project of the U.S., and the Arts Marketing Association of the UK. And now, your hosts, Carol Jones and Ron Evans.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Culture Voice, the podcast. It is an international perspective on marketing the arts and culture between the UK and the US. I'm your host, Ron Evans, here with my co-host, Carol Jones. Carol, are you there?
Yes, I'm here in sunny Cardiff, Ron.
Yes, fantastic. And we are today talking with a guest, Adam Thurman, who is Director of Marketing Communications at Children's Theater Company in Minneapolis. I've known Adam for many years. He's spoken at the National Arts Marketing Project Conference. He's also the author of the Mission Paradox blog, which I've read for a long time, and many of you probably have as well. So he's a smart mind in the sector, talking about all things marketing the arts. Adam, how's it going, man?
It is going fantastic. Thanks for having me. This is day three of my new life here at Children's Theater Company in Minneapolis.
Oh.
So I am, day three. So I am still learning how to, like, cut on my computer and things like that. But it is all going beautifully. I'm loving the transition.
Absolutely. That is very cool. Well, one of the reasons we wanted to have you here is that at this year's National Arts Marketing Project Conference, which is in Austin, I believe November 11th through the 14th, you, my friend, are leading a pre-conference. And the pre-conference is called the Sprinting Sessions, a workshop on arts marketing, change, and the connection economy. I was hoping maybe you could give Carol and myself a little breakdown on what that pre-conference is about.
Yeah, you know, when they came to me with the opportunity to do the pre-conference, my first thought was, how do I create a space, along with my co-presenter, Linda Butler, how do we create a space where people can really have room to think? Because one of the things that we know from having done this work for so long is that the marketing life is always very go, go, go. And even the conference itself, the main conference in Austin, everything kind of happens in these, you know, 60-minute, 90-minute increments, and everyone's sort of rushing from place to place. And so, you know, the primary goal of the workshop is to create this environment where you do a little less and you think a little more. And that's why we wanted to really focus on these big picture ideas, like, you know, the connection economy and what that means, and, you know, invitation and permission, so that people, because I think those are important elements to being a good marketer that often just don't come up while we're doing the very important work of our day-to-day. So that's the big idea, is getting a group of very smart people in a room, trying to remove them from the day-to-day for a few hours, give them some new and hopefully interesting things to think about, and, you know, out of that should come some fresh perspective, some new ideas, some new energy. That's kind of the goal.
So you mentioned the connection economy. Let's zoom in on that a little bit. What's your definition of that, or how would you present that to folks?
What the connection economy means is, you know, an economy is primarily a system of how value is built. And I think that what marketers, particularly those of us in the arts, are trying to do is to try to figure out how to build value around whatever it is we do. And I think one of the main shifts happening in the world is that one primary way of building value is through your ability to be sort of connected to something else, whether it's a grand mission or a set of values or a particular community, the power of the connection you have to a particular group or idea really is where the value comes from. And so what we're trying to get people to think about is, how do you build the right relationship with a defined community in a way that's going to connect you to them, get trust going, and hopefully get you the audience that you deserve? It is that question of, what does an organization mean besides the work it produces? You know, what does a theater represent when it's dark? What does a museum represent when the doors are closed, right? Because I think part of what we've become very good at in the field is trying to sell a particular thing. You know, do you want to see this play? Do you want to see this exhibition? And that is a very transactional thought that can be disadvantaged to an organization, because selling is all about individual taste. You know, do you like musicals? Do you not like musicals? Do you recognize this title? Do you not recognize this title? And part of what we're trying to get people to think about in the workshop is to just ask a different question, right? Are we aligned? Does what this organization stand for align with what you believe in? And if we have that level of alignment, that level of connection to each other, then one of the ways that you, audience member, potential audience member, could demonstrate that is by coming to see this work, by coming to see this artist exhibition, by going to this author's book signing. You know, it's that act of buying a ticket, buying a membership, volunteering, donating, joining a board, are all built around that shared set of values, that shared set of purpose. And having a space where you can think about that is so vital, because, again, in the field, we're very used to being very transactional, being very sales-orientated. And if you have an environment that's very transactional, very sales-orientated, it is, for example, hard to take artistic risk. Because often by the very nature, you're giving people, and I'm using air quotes even though you can't see them, stuff they don't want to see. You know what I mean? And so if you're a museum and you have this very provocative work, the answer to do you want to see this may be no. Not interested. But the question of, are we aligned around the same values, if that's a yes, it might be easier to make the case for going to see the work that they are, again, air quotes, not interested in.
And do you think, Adam, that a social space is a really important part of that mix, where people can engage with the organization, almost check out the values, engage in a different way, and maybe grow to find out more about it in a very different way that isn't predicated by the hard sell?
Yes. Because we're very, as consumers, as human beings, we are very immune to the hard sell. We see it, we see through it. What we're looking for, again, as human beings, are narratives and stories we can relate to. And I think it's partially about getting an arts organization to think less about, again, what's going on Saturday night, which will always be different, will always change. The public will respond to in various ways for various reasons that you don't even fully control. To something that you can control, to an idea of a statement of purpose and values that you have more control over, can be more eloquent about, can be clearer about. And again, I think that ultimately is what helps to drive the revenue and the audience that an organization needs at the end of the process.
It's interesting, Adam. You're throwing out some, dropping some bombs here on artistic programming, which I think is great. And even the concept just thrown out there. Hey, you know what you want to put on? A lot of people don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just saying it how it is, and it's so important because it's absolutely true. And we feel like it's our job to convince people to twist their arms into wanting to participate in this in some way or another. So we at times in the past have been guilty of beating them over the head with newsletters of buy tickets now and that sort of thing. And you're speaking about a whole new level of seeing value in an organization or the mission, how that organization benefits the community, for example, or what it stands for and how that aligns with each person's values, where they may not want to see the show, but they're really hit to the survival of the organization and appreciate that it's there. I think that offers huge benefits.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to this question of artistic risk, right, you have all different sorts of organizations, those that kind of play into audience taste very heavily, right, by producing programming that's very well-known, kind of populist. And again, those aren't value judgments. I think that's a great way to do work. You have other organizations that pride themselves on a different level of artistic risk, which, again, isn't good or bad. It's just a thing people do. And I think that when it comes to this question of artistic risk, if a theater is choosing to go into that, the question becomes, well, why should I as an audience member see it? And I think that, to use a different analogy, if a good friend's cooking you dinner and you're going to his house, her house, and you show up and it's a style of food you are unfamiliar with, you don't just walk out. You don't just say, you know what, screw this, I'm here for Italian, this is not what this is, I'm going home. Even though you may not be thrilled with this moment right now, right, you still show up because that's the relationship that you have. And it may turn out that you loved what they cooked. You just were never exposed to it till this moment, right? Maybe it wasn't really risky at all. It was just perceived that way. But the thing that's going to get you to sit down at that table when you are uncertain about whether or not you're going to like what you experience is that core idea, well, you know what? I trust this organization. I trust this person.
Yeah.
And they have my best interest at heart. That is why they invited me. And so the question of, and even if you sit down to this meal you were unfamiliar with and didn't love it, that doesn't ruin the friendship, right? It's not like I'm never coming back. But when you think about, like, oftentimes in our world, we're creating a very consumer-based transactional relationship where it's a constant referendum of, do you like this? And then if the answer is no, then that severs the relationship entirely. And so I don't believe arts organizations can survive off that kind of relationship. There has to be a different one. And the drive to building that different relationship has to be purposeful. Like, it doesn't just happen. What naturally occurs is sort of the consumer-orientated model of, here is a package of things that you may or may not like. And so really, you know, part of the reason I think being at the pre-con is so important is that I haven't met an organization yet, and I've been doing this for quite a while. I've probably worked with, whether it's a workshop or consulting, I don't know, maybe 500 different organizations and various sizes, various art forms. The one thing they all had in common is that they wanted a different relationship with their patrons that was less consumer-orientated and more driven by a set of mission and values. Like, that is across the board, small, large, visual art, dance, theater. They want the relationship to be different. And so this is just a way of thinking about how to drive that different relationship?
Starting that relationship that builds that trust, Adam, is not easy. Have you got any advice or tips about how an organization can start building that trust and moving away from that transactional relationship to something that's deeper and more meaningful?
One of the things we'll talk about at the workshop is a theory of audience change. A guy named Michael Schrage, who teaches innovation in a lot of places, including MIT, talked about how what a great company does is try to get their audience to change in some way. And so under that theory, a big company like Starbucks didn't just try to sell coffee, they tried to change the way coffee was perceived and valued in the marketplace. And I think that when you look at most great companies, particularly those that have come up in sort of the modern world, let's call it the last 10, 20 years, most of them have been built on some theory of here's how we're trying to change behavior, change the way things are perceived. I think that this idea of getting people to feel comfortable starts with an organization being very clear about the change they want to create. So when I worked in Chicago, the change we wanted to create at the organization I worked for there was we wanted to make our audience smarter. That's what we wanted, right?
Yeah.
The goal of
yeah.
every marketing thing we delivered, and we use the same set of tools as everybody else, email, print, whatever. When we created it, we created it with the purpose in mind of trying to make you smarter. And so if you're thoughtful about that, then people are a little more willing to interact with you because they know it's just not going to be the same old thing delivered in the same old way. You know?
And so
the first step to building that relationship, I think, is internally some clarity on this is what we want. This is what we're trying to do when we touch the public. And then trying to incorporate those elements. And again, this is the thing we'll talk about in the workshop, into your marketing so that it doesn't always feel like a sales pitch.
I mean, I'm fascinated by this conversation about making the audience change or supporting that audience change.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really aware that we need whole organizational buy-in to that idea for it to stand any chance of success. Will the pre-con touch on ways that you can bring an organization together so that you're not just siloed in your marketing team, but actually this is something that the whole organization wants and is driving?
Yes. We think a lot about that, and it's an excellent point.
Yeah.
The workshop is sort of this interesting thing because what we're trying to do is sort of put different language into people's heads, right? So
yeah.
Hopefully, if people come to the workshop, this idea of like a audience change and invitation and connection economy is now words that are going from our heads to their heads, right? And then part of their responsibility then is to go take those words from their heads to their organization's heads. Because I think ultimately what has to happen in order to get the marketing people need is kind of a shared language. A language where
absolutely.
Sort of when you, I just arrived here in Minneapolis and am sort of building and working with the team here. And occasionally I'll just say, what change are we trying to create with this thing? That's it. Just what change do we want to create with this email?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's a small step of like, trying to get language from my head to their head,
Uh-huh.
And then, or we'll talk about, framing an invitation. You know, just little things, right? It's not a huge lecture. It's just those words, I think, when used consistently, become very powerful. And so I think that's actually a huge part of the workshop, is that getting the language together. Right?
Well, Adam, Adam, in looking at the pre-conference here, who would you think would be a best fit? We talking marketing director? We talking executive director? Both? Neither?
I think both. I think it's, you know, it's great for marketing directors. That is sort of the intended audience. But great for anyone in any position of sort of leadership that is just interested in figuring out how to do marketing now. I think it's a, you know, the goal is to be very contemporary, to try to be current in our thinking. And so I think anyone who is interested in getting that understanding, the pre-con is going to be good for them.
Awesome.
I also love how you described how you were going to create the space for the pre-con. So you described it as doing a little less, but thinking a little more. I want that T-shirt, Adam, please. Because I think that's a great philosophy.
I'll work on it.
So ladies and gentlemen, as you're listening here, if you're planning on going to the National Arts Marketing Project Conference in Austin, you may want to consider taking Adam's pre-conference and learning a little bit more about the connection economy, and especially setting aside your day-to-day, leaving that maybe outside the walls and the door of that room, and coming in and having some time to think about things in a new perspective, which it sounds like, Adam, that would be your goal. They take that back and have their patrons think about a new perspective.
Absolutely.
More information about the pre-conference is up on the artsmarketing.org website. So it's artsmarketing.org/conference. And you can look up the pre-conference at the left-hand side there and get some more information about Adam. And I think your contact information is up there as well. So if you all have some questions for him, send them on over in advance. I'm sure, Adam, you'd love to have some pre-communication from folks.
Absolutely.
Well, let's jump over as we get towards the tail end of our session today and do our round robin of different tools or resources or things that we've come across. Carol, do you have anything in your bag of tricks that you'd like to share with the world?
Well, I'm certainly going to subscribe to Mission Paradox blog. I haven't as yet, but that sounds like a really good read. So that'll be number one on my agenda after this podcast. But I'm going to recommend, and it's a UK resource, it's a website. It's called culturehive.co.uk. Don't worry, those of you across the pond, there's lots of international resources on it as well. And it's really a website that is about discovering, sharing, and inspiring best practice. It's got thousands of resources, case studies, templates, guides from just about every aspect of not just arts marketing, but management, fundraising. It's all on there. You can upload your own resources as well. They do get vetted before they go live, but if there's something that you really think would be good to share with a community, that's the place to do it. It's an initiative of the Arts Marketing Association, great organization, culturehive.co.uk.
Awesome. Great resource. Love that website. I'll go so we can leave the last but not least to our guests. I'm going to recommend everybody check out a website called x.ai. x.ai. It is a prototype artificial intelligence chatbot that you email and it schedules all of your meetings for you. No more of this back and forth of, are you available at 3? Well, what about Thursday? Well, I can only do Wednesday, but only until 2 o'clock. All you do is sign up for the service. There is a little bit of a waiting list. It's free, and you then get into the service. All you do is CC your robots, if you will, your artificial intelligence, on an email, in your regular email, and address them by name and say, for example, Andy, can you set up a meeting with Adam next week on Thursday between 5 and 10, for example? And Andy will then take that and converse with Adam over email and work out a time that it's good for that meeting, and then put it into my calendar automatically so I don't even have to do it. It is fantastic technology. It's come a long way. I was a beta tester for it. It's now available commercially. You can pay for it and rename your person and all that kind of stuff. But X.AI could radically increase our efficiency in communication, so we don't have to have all that back and forth.
I was just going to say, that sounds great. I want it.
Yes.
I need it. I more than want it. I really do need it.
I'm looking at it on my screen as you speak. Mine is a book called A Beautiful Constraint by Adam Morgan and Mark Barton. Again, the book's called A Beautiful Constraint. I actually gave away a copy of it on my blog several months ago. And it's a fantastic book that I highly recommend that is essentially about, you know, ways to sort of reconsider and reimagine the obstacles that you have in your work. And it gives a framework of thinking about trying to decide whether a constraint, an obstacle you have in your work should be, you know, overcome, should be modified, or should just be dealt with and accepted. And so it's a really fascinating book that I got some training in that I think is an invaluable resource, particularly for us in the arts marketing world, where we're often dealing with a wide variety of constraints that we have no control over. And so learning how to work within those constraints, make the most out of them, it's just vital for us. We will also incorporate some of that thinking into the workshop in Austin. And so it's called A Beautiful Constraint.
Sounds really interesting. Yeah. I think overcoming those constraints
bedtime
we all run into is great.
Yep.
That's my bedtime reading sorted. Great.
Yes.
Well, Adam, it has been fantastic having you here on the podcast. I'm looking forward to hearing more about the pre-conference as it's coming up. But thank you for taking the time out of your day, your new day at your new organization, to chat with us a little bit about it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you guys so much.
And Carol, as always, fantastic insights. My counterpart in the UK, thank you so much for taking time on the call today to talk about these issues and give us your unique perspective.
It's been a real pleasure, Ron, and great and inspiring to listen to you, Adam. Can't wait to meet you in Austin.
See you soon.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We look forward to bringing you future discussions on the marketing of arts and culture. Take care and talk soon.
You've been listening to Culture Voice. If you like this episode, subscribe and stay connected to the latest conversations on the marketing of arts and culture.